Well, good morning. Glad to have everybody this morning. We're going to be starting a new sermon series today, and this is going to be loosely based on a book that I read this last fall called God is Here, Reimagining the Divine, and it's by a Reconstructionist rabbi named Rabbi Tova Spitzer. Just like a little fun fact, I was talking about this with a friend of mine who's also a Blue Ocean pastor out in Boston, Reservoir Church. I was talking to Steve, and they had done a sermon series on this, actually, and he goes, I know Rabbi Tova. We're on like an interfaith council together. So he connected me. She gave me some great resources. So if you pick up that book and you'd like a little bit more information, I can certainly provide that to you. And her book, what she's doing is she's saying, you know, there's a lot of metaphors for God in the scripture, and some of them are well-trod, some of them are not. Some are useful for today, some are less useful for today in our context. So she was like, you know, what would actually be helpful ways for us to think about God as modern people? And I think she breaks out like 10, and so I'm choosing the four that really resonated with me. And so the one that I'd like to share with you today is God as place, or God as the place. And we're going to be looking at it from the story of Jacob, or one of the stories about Jacob from Genesis 28. But to set this up, you know, we've got Genesis 28 written out there. What's been going on is there's a lovely story about a dysfunctional family. Some of us can probably relate. Even if it's not our immediate family, there's probably somebody somewhere in your extended family that likes to stir up a little bit of drama. And so what we have here is the drama of a couple of brothers who are twins. And so we've got two twin boys. One of them is mama's favorite. One of them is daddy's favorite. Mama's favorite is Jacob, daddy's favorite is Esau. So it turns out daddy is pretty much into hospice care. He's failing in his health. You can tell his sight is going, his hearing seems to be going somewhat as well, maybe a little bit senile, and he's not even able to really tell or distinguish who it is that's visiting him. And so mama goes to her favorite son, and she says, you know, Jacob, you could probably go in there and trick your dad and essentially signing over the inheritance that would belong to the firstborn, your twin brother, to you. And so Jacob does that, right? Kind of a Weasley thing to do. The word that kept coming to my mind was like, what a little stinker, which is not like the best thing to maybe say from the pulpit, but I was like, man, Jacob. So he's like, okay, mom. So he goes and he does it. And naturally, when his big brother finds out, he's absolutely irate, as any of us would be if that happened in our family. And so his brother's going around searching for all the places where he might find his brother because he wants to kill him. So mama goes to Jacob and she's like, whoops, your brother's really mad. So I think what you're going to have to do is you're just going to have to leave. Like, you're going to have to get out of Dodge. I've got a brother, or who's like your uncle, over here in another place called Haran. So why don't you go out there for a little while? I'll try and send word if things are ever good, okay? So Jacob takes off. This is where we find ourselves in Genesis 28. He's come to this place where there's this sort of barren field, and it seems to be mostly just dirt and rocks. Could be rocky, because I kind of know that area of Israel, but at least that traditionally has been said is this place. It's just kind of rocky and slightly hilly. There's a lot of like goat tending that goes on even today. And so he finds himself in this place, and Robert Alter, who's the Hebrew scholar, says that his mom kind of came up with this story. He's like, he's going off to see his uncle, but it really seems like that's kind of a cover. He's really been exiled from his family. And the cover story that his mom is giving is, you know, these local ladies, they're not good enough for you. So you're going to have to go off to find somebody like really special, right, to marry. So here's Jacob. He's running away. He's got this cover story going on. He's in this place. It's called Luz, is what the text tells us it used to be called. Robert Alter says that place was really just, this is his words, a generic cultic place for the Canaanites in the centuries prior, and it's clear that the setting is supposed to be the middle of nowhere. Right, so he's in the middle of nowhere in a place in some proximity to a place called Luz. And so we're going to look at the story. You can see I've highlighted a few of the words from Genesis 28. It says, and Jacob left Beersheba, and he set out for Haran. And he came upon a certain place, and he stopped there for the night. For the sun had set, and he took one of the stones of the place, and he put it at his head, and he lay down in that place. And he dreamed, and look, a ramp was set up against the ground with its top reaching the heavens. And look, messengers of God were going up and coming down it, and look, the Lord was poised over him, and the Lord said, I, the Lord, am the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, to you I will give it, and to your seed, and to your seed shall be just shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall burst forth to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south, and all of the clans of the earth shall be blessed through you and through your seed. And look, I am with you, and I will guard you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I've done that which I have spoken to you. And Jacob awoke from his sleep, and he said, indeed, the Lord is in this place, and I did not know. And he was afraid, and he said, how fearsome is this place? This can be but the house of God, and this is the gate of the heavens. And Jacob rose early in the morning, and he took the stone that he had put at his head, and he set it as a pillar, and he poured oil over its top, and he called the name of that place Bethel, though the name of the town before had been Luz. So first, a couple of notes. For those of you who might be familiar with this story, we often call it Jacob's Ladder. Probably heard that. Robert Alter said that's a pretty unlikely translation. The phrase that's used there indicates it's more like a ramp that would be part of like a Mesopotamian ziggurat. So if you've seen those like pyramid type things where there's like a top and then a ramp down and then maybe a little terrace. And so the picture is a little bit more of like a ramp with a terrace and a ramp with a terrace with the angel or sort of the messengers going up and down. And then we also notice here the word repetition, some of which I highlighted. So I think Robert Alter's translation of the Hebrew brings out this feeling that highlights the oral tradition, right? So you can tell this had been passed down, and you can get a little bit of the like the melodious feel of it. And so the first word that I had highlighted there, the place, is called ha-mikom, ha-mikom. So ha's just a bit in Hebrew, it's like the or a, and makom means place. So Jacob came upon the place. He took one of the stones of the place. He lay down in the place. So we have that first set of three, and then as he's having his dream, which kind of pull your eyes up toward the heavens, you start to see these words that are keeping you tethered to the ground, a lot of words about earth, soil, land, seed, which here can talk about like further generations. It's also sometimes used to indicate like semen, so it's like grounding him in his body. So we've got these very like earthy sorts of words being used. And then Jacob wakes up. The Lord is in this place. How fearsome is this place? Sometimes translated, how awesome is this place? And he called the name of the place Beit El Bethel, which means house of God. Right, so that makom is used six times in nine verses. And what do we know about this place where Jacob finds himself? Well, we've said that it seems to be sort of generic. It's a little bit inhospitable. It's a field in the middle of nowhere. He's got a rock he's laying his head on. Apparently, there's no tufts of grass, something softer. We also know that he's been a little bit of a scumbag, right? So, like, emotionally, the place he is in, he might be in a little bit of a guilty place. He's been exiled from his loved ones. His brother wants to kill him. He doesn't know if he'll ever be able to go back, or if he can, what that will look like or be like. So psychologically and emotionally, he's in a really rough place. Right? He's lonely, desperate, fearful, probably uncertain. Maybe he has a little bit of hope. He's got an uncle he's going to go to. But really, he's in a place of quite a lot of desolation in a lot of senses of the word. And yet, God meets him in that place. And so maybe the people who have preserved this text and have passed it on for thousands of years want to pass down to us this idea that God can meet us anywhere, at any time, in any place, no matter what's going on in our lives, no matter what we've done. We also notice that his experience didn't happen on top of the ramp, right? But it happened down here on the ground. And we talked about how the text kept pulling us back there. Right, that Jacob didn't have to like ascend, he didn't have to rise to some lofty spiritual plane to meet God, but God's self came and just stood and hovered over Jacob right where he was at on the ground and spoke encouragement to him. So it's going to be okay. And God gave Jacob a vision for his future. He said, you've got a future. And he gave him his assurances of God's presence with him, even though everything was feeling pretty gross. You know, I've noticed that spiritual experiences are very often associated with a place. I've talked with a lot of people over a lot of years about like different mystical encounters they've had or maybe spiritual experiences. And even if you don't have a religious background, like if you ask someone to describe a spiritual experience, even if they're, you know, atheist or agnostic, often like that word that will be associated with like a place, like they can usually come up with a story and they'll usually describe like a place in nature where maybe they felt connected to everything, to all the living world around them. Or maybe you'll describe a place that's like maybe a big concert. Like there's something that's really like connecting to other people. When we sing together, our hearts sink and we can start to feel that connection to a larger group of people, and that feeling of connection is often what we describe as this sort of spiritual experience. Sometimes people will describe just something transcendent, a piece of art that sort of elevated them, or sometimes they'll talk about a place in their imaginations. So a long time ago, I read a book called Prayer as a Place by Phyllis Tickle. Some of you may have read it because, you know, Ken was a big fan of Phyllis's. And there was something in that particular book that resonated with me because Phyllis, she was an Episcopalian, and she prayed the hours. So she did a lot more of like a more rote prayers where then she would allow herself to have like more meditative experiences in this like praying through the day. But she always talked about when she would sit down to pray her noontime prayers or her 3 o'clock prayers or whenever, that she would imagine a certain place in her head, and that she always went to that place. And I don't know if it was a real place, you know, like a memory for her, or if it was something that in her imagination, she would talk about as like a big tree that she would be under. And when I had a chance to ask her about it, she would get a little bit embarrassed because it feels really intimate, right, to talk to somebody about this sort of safe, connected space in your own head. It's very personal. But what she was doing when she did that was she was locating herself in God, and God the place inside of herself. Right? It makes me think of like the Eastern Orthodox tradition of like descending with your mind into your heart as you pray, right? It's finding this place of God in us. And that resonated with me because I also have a place that I visit usually when I pray. And so sometimes when we have our meditations after the service together, I'll ask you to picture a place. And I know some of you also have a place that's just, you might say, is in your mind. Many of you I've talked to and you're like, oh no, it's like this place where we vacation that just feels like this beautiful place for me, or it's a place where you walk. And all of that is very valid, right? That's the power of place to help us feel connected. And I love the idea of imagining the Creator meeting all of us in these various places, both real as well as imagined, that God, the place, is everywhere and all-encompassing. Which is why Rabbi Tova Spitzer, she says this, she said, by the early rabbinic period, which is so the first 200 years or so after Jesus, she said the epithet HaMakom, the place, had become a fairly well-known Jewish name for God. So it's just another name for God, the place, HaMakom. And that makes sense to me in the scheme of their history, right? Because in Jesus' time, there was a lot of tension. About 3 or 4 centuries after Jesus died, Rome came in and just destroyed the temple in Jerusalem. So the temple was like the center of all the Jewish religious life. It's the place where even if you lived a little bit far away, you would go in for Passover, you would go in for the annual sacrifice. It was close enough that you could go there for the center of your religious experience. A lot of times people would go there for set hour prayers through the day. And when the Romans came in, they just destroyed that. And so suddenly, this place that was on this special place called Mount Moriah, which we now call the Temple Mount, it was this devastating event. It was like the special place where we go to meet God is not accessible to us. And so the rabbis, the early rabbis, had to grapple with that and say, okay, we don't have the temple, and some of us are now scattered in all of these different places. How do we make sense of where we can go to meet God? And so they started to talk about God as being the place that can be found whenever and wherever we are, right? That the place is always with us. And so what they were doing was embracing this early idea of divine as place, being everywhere at every time, kind of like at Mount Sinai, often the Jewish imagination is that all people and all time converged in that one place. And so Jacob's dream here in Genesis 28 was an important source for this metaphor. because it's talking about the nearness of God in the midst of trial. It's talking about the accessibility of God in moments of great vulnerability and in moments of transition in our lives. And it's talking about God as like an experience of wonder. Right? You are awesome in this place. So upon waking from his dream, we see Jacob's still a little bit scared. He's a little bit taken aback that God could be found in that place. And yet he realizes he's in the presence of something holy and something powerful. And he's learned that there's divinity even in places where we really wish we didn't have to be. How awesome is this place? Indicates that we acknowledge the potential for having this kind of expanded awareness in any moment, in any situation. That's Rabbi Tova, right? It's the idea that it's in this place, this spot that I'm inhabiting in this moment, not where I hope to be, not where I think I should be, this moment that holds the potential for direct experience of something sacred, no matter how messed up that place might feel. And I think it can be a little bit arresting to realize the power and presence of the divine, especially when we're least expecting it, maybe not feeling deserving of it, maybe we're feeling a little bit broken open, we've got thoughts and emotions that don't seem quite compatible with meeting with a compassionate God, and yet here we are with this story wrestling with it as Jacob did. So there's personal implications to this idea of thinking about God as the place, right, and locating God inside of us. I think that includes our bodies and our minds, and so it means being kind to ourselves and caring for our bodies. But it also means embracing God as the place externally, and so there's a more communal implication to this idea of God as sacred place, because sacred place is everywhere, right? It's the dirt, it's the soil, it's the trees. And so Rabbi Tova says, we're commanded to preserve, not destroy, the sacred place in which we find ourselves as earthly beings. Right? If we think about God as the place, we have to take seriously the care of the natural world as well as part of our spiritual duty to the creation. So at this point, I'm going to invite you, if you would like, we're going to have a guided meditation. And so if you're newer here, we often take a minute or two, sometimes with just silence, and sometimes I'll do a little bit of guided meditation. You don't have to participate, but I invite you to. And just relax your body. Be mindful of your space here. Feel your feet on the ground. Relax your neck and your shoulders. Just open ourselves to the possibility that maybe there is a God who cares where we're at in this place. So I invite you to imagine yourself in that place that feels safe and peaceful to you. And as you imagine yourself there, I'll take a moment, just pay attention to what it looks like, to what it feels like, to what it smells like, to what it sounds like. And as you're breathing, on your inhale, you are awesome. And on the exhale, in this place, you are awesome in this place. Let's spend about a minute doing that. Thank you. So Holy Spirit, as we go through our week, I ask that you would remind us of your presence, even in places where it feels like you would be unlikely to show up. That you would remind us of your presence in times of joy, as well as sadness and all of the gamut in between. And I would pray especially for those who are feeling like they're in a place of real desolation or discouragement, that you would meet them in that place and really just speak words of encouragement and hope, however it is that we understand those. Be with us this week. Amen.